Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we have had many candidates on the show who are running for mayor of the city of Baltimore. We'll have many more because the race is on. And we've done city issues here on the air for the last 18 or so years that we've been on the air. And the issue of taxes is one that always comes up. And the issue of property taxes is one that's in the forefront of this race. Almost every candidate I know who's running, including the woman who sits in City Hall right now, have talked on some level about cutting taxes gradually by a little bit, that you can cut them, and in 5 years we'll every year for 5 years, and you'll see this growth in the city. People will move in. Others are saying, what's going to happen? So what services do you cut? Sounds all fine and dandy, but what do you cut? And there's a larger questions are that people might ask as well. Is this whole system of basing the finances of our localities based on property taxes just antiquated? That hurts poor communities more than wealthy communities. Whatever I guess is compared to San Francisco and the cuts there. We'll talk about that. Property values in San Francisco being a great deal more than they are here in Baltimore, Maryland. So we're going to have at that in the course of this next hour. And we really want you to join us at 410-319-8888. You'll be, hopefully, the ones voting if you live in Baltimore City. Or some people who seem to be living in other places want to vote here, too. We'll talk about that another day. If you live in Baltimore City, and we hope that you do vote in this election, we want to know your thoughts about property taxes, your property taxes, how you think about taxation in the city and life in the city. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We have with us Neil Bergsman, who is director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute. Welcome back to the show, Neil. It's been a while. Welcome.
Glad to be back. Thank you.
On the phone, we have Christopher Summers, who is a founder and president. You're right here. Christopher Summers is founder and president of the Maryland Public Policy Institute. I'm sorry, Chris. Welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you again, Mark.
Trey Lewis is with us, who's president of Baltimore City Young Republicans.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm good, Trey. And I'm sitting in for Anthony McCarthy.
Yeah, this Friday. I'll be sitting in for him again.
I'll have to listen to you. Hathaway Farabee is executive director of the Safe and Sound campaign. Hathaway, welcome. Good to have you back on again.
Always good to be here.
And Andrew Wyschowski is with us. He is professor of public affairs and applied economics at the School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who knows a great deal about taxation in local communities and joins us with a larger national perspective as well. And Andrew, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So are you, as we go through this, are you an Andrew or an Andy?
Andrew is fine.
Okay, good. Just making sure. So, and we lines open here, 410-319-8888. And let me just answer this question. I mean, across the nation, this issue of taxation in localities is not just a parochial issue in the sense that it's not just Baltimore arguing. This is in this challenged economy, for an easy term, is a huge thing for people because people are worried about what's going to be the future of cities, how you're going to invest in them, but also how much do we have to pay.
It's interesting that the property tax has been the stable source of revenue for cities in over past decades. Look what's happened to income taxes, sales taxes. When we go into a recession, they plummet. State aid gets cut, squeezing cities. But it's the property tax that has always remained fairly stable. And what's really frightening now is that around the country, when property values fall, property tax revenues are beginning to decline and putting a lot of pressure on city financing. Baltimore less than some places. Be glad you're not Las Vegas, where property values have fallen by 50 or 60%.
And I'm curious, we'll go around the room here, and Andrew, just leap in with your also thoughts and questions as you hear this, because I'm really interested in your perspective, having read some of the things you've been thinking about. The question of cutting property taxes, you've made a huge issue, Chris Summers, of cutting the tax in the city. You've been one of the leaders of the idea that we should be cutting our taxes pretty drastically, if I have right what you've been writing.
Correct.
So talk a bit about that.
Well, I'm so delighted that finally this issue is receiving the adult conversation that has been needed for so very long, as I remind people that my older brother and I were probably the only ones in elementary school that could tell you everything about property taxes.
I'm sure you were.
Because we had a father that reminded us, growing up in Baltimore City, of what the burden of that high taxation rate was. And it's it's been a long time overdue that this issue has received this sort of attention. And now you're seeing, and it's just sort of as everything is starting to come in alignment, that this is the priority issue as it's taking shape in this mayoral election, that not so much of how we do this, but it's we need to do this now.
Let me kind of cut to the chase since we have an hour and five people. And not that I want to kind of truncate what you had to say, but so lay out for us what this means for you. What does it mean to – I mean every candidate is talking about cutting taxes. Catherine Pugh sat where you're sitting. Right. Carl Stokes sat where you're sitting. Jody Landers have all talked about cutting taxes and pretty quickly. And there's a lot of pushback there. We'll get to it in a bit. But, I mean, so talk more succinctly about what you're talking about.
Well, they understand now that they need to attract investment and they need to have a vehicle that also attracts entrepreneurs, that attracts residents back to the city and stopping sort of the hemorrhaging that has taken place for decades of not only residents fleeing the city but also jobs and employers. Who, you know, high property taxes don't just burden homeowners, but it also burdens employers. And these are the people that are providing jobs within the city. And I think now that as you're seeing this tax base shrink and the escalation of taxes over years, that they realize that they need to dramatically change course if they want to spur economic investment and grow the city.
Neil?
Well, it's hard to argue that the high property tax rate isn't out of line and that it isn't a big disadvantage for Baltimore City. But I would argue that it's perhaps a distant third in the problems that the next mayor is going to have to deal with.
A distant third.
Okay. In my view, the high property tax rate is a very serious disadvantage for the city, but the perception and the true quality of the schools and the perception of the true crime problem are not just disadvantages. Those are obstacles to the city's growth and development. And to restore health to the city, you got to deal with schools and crime first. That's what's keeping people and businesses from moving in more than the property tax rate. And you probably need some additional revenues in the short term in order to tackle crime in schools.
All right. And let me turn to the phones and we'll come back to Trey. Okay, Trey?
All right. No problem.
You know, you can always jump in when you feel like jumping in. So just jump in. Hathaway, and you look at this. It was interesting. My sense is that you're looking at this issue as property taxes may be the same, they may get lower, but you think there's an entirely different way of looking at this.
Yes, actually, I agree with Neil that it's crime and opportunities for people that live in the city, which also is directly related to the fact that our property tax is so high. I think that we can absolutely and must cut the property tax, and we can do so when we have a majority of the adults residing in our city contributing to our revenue base, either through income tax, sales tax, and yes, property tax. Right now, and you've heard me say this, Mark, many times, the state spends about $750 million a year to take custody of people that live in the city. Now, the problem with that is that, of course, it's disruptive. It's foster care, juvenile confinement, and prison. The problem is none of those folks, which are about 16,000 a year, are earning a wage. So none of them are paying sales tax, of which the city gets half. They're not earning income. And from our estimation, what we think is couple stage plan. One, the city has got to start putting more of their own money into basic opportunities where kids are born healthy, where they get jobs, and where we create jobs for people in our city. We have to stop giving tax breaks to development projects and only asking for 10% commitment to hire Baltimore employees. Let me just give you one number. If the amount of adults now that are in prison each year from Baltimore, which is about 10,500, if, and I'm just doing this 100%, of course, I'm not advocating 100%, but just
right.
for ease.
Right.
That's about $347 million the state spends on behalf of Baltimore. We could redirect a portion of that money. They are spending it on Baltimore City. They're just spending it now to house people, many of whom do not need to be there. If those people got a job just at minimum wage, they would produce about $500,000 worth of sales tax in the city because of the consumer index. And an income tax, which is lower, of course, the city would get half of it, the city would get about $362,000 in income tax. So our perspective is, yes, the property tax is way out of whack, primarily because so many people in Baltimore are not productive wage earners, and so much of our money in Baltimore goes to crime control. We think that that crime control does not create safe communities. In fact, we think it creates more chaos. We are at right now, most of the folks that I work with are down at the city council hearing on the budget, urging the council to vote against the mayor's budget and add 4,000 more jobs for kids in the summer. One, we think that'll do a whole lot for public safety. It'll do a whole lot for the kids, and it starts to the spending in the city. We got to spend in the city as if we have capable people in the city and that we expect success. And I am a huge advocate, and we'll be crunching these numbers. Not that we're running for mayor, but we will be crunching them as the candidates do, because we think we can really show over time when you start using some of the city's discretionary dollars to put jobs on the streets that we can then get people back from these custodial programs. And right now, through the Maryland Opportunity Compact, the state gives that money back to the city. So we think that's the way to go.
The three ills of Baltimore City, the reason why people don't live here, are crime, education, and taxes. And they're all intertwined. They're not a distant third, second, or first. They're all one and the same. The taxes in Baltimore City, when it comes to the utility tax and when it comes to your property tax, is doubled than it is in your neighborhood jurisdiction, which is Baltimore County. Doubled. And not to mention, that's also coupled with the fact that your home value is half of what it is in Baltimore County. Your home in Kearney is $240,000 as opposed to, if it's in Lauraville, Baltimore City, is $160,000. That has a dramatic impact on the way the city will foster and be a progressive town. If you analyze it and you go through the first thing that's the easiest to change in that, education and crime is very hard to change in a short period of time. But the first and foremost thing you have to change is the way government conducts its business. The way government conducts its business is primarily centered around taxes. The taxation system in Baltimore City has to be changed before you change anything else that you want to do as far as progressing this town. So I think the foremost and the pillar, the highest one you have to go after, is taxes. If you change the tax codes, if you alleviate the tax burdens and problems on business and residents, then you will see a dramatic change in how the city will be able to use its fund and allocate it in more serious manners and be able to really make this town a new age town.
Now, gentlemen, I'll let you all jump in here. I'll let Andrew kind of respond from the outside. I want you all to jump in here. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. If you live in Baltimore City, are your property taxes too high? If you live in Baltimore County, Montgomery County, Prince George's County, one of the reasons you're living there is because your property taxes are lower. And is that true? And what are your thoughts about that? And 410-319-8888, what do you think should happen in Baltimore City with property taxes? Up, cut them, leave them? Is there room for more revenue? Are some of the reasons you don't live in the city because of schools and crime, or is it taxes? 410-319-8888, and we'll jump you in here between our guests as you call in at 410-319-8888. But so the question I have then, though, and if you look at Baltimore City, this is just real. I mean, you can't get your way around them. Everybody, many people running for mayor are saying that we want to cut these property taxes in half. We want to halve them. In 2 years, in 5 years, they want to halve the taxes. Well, that's $383 million less in revenue. Sure. So you do that. What do you cut? What do you do away with? Don't tell me this fat in government. You can cut a trash collector. What do you do?
Well, that's a quarter of the city's budget, just to give some perspective. I mean, it's huge, and we see lots of protests now about closure of fire stations and rec centers and pools and what have you. So, I mean, that's nothing compared to what the city residents would have to do without if you were to cut $320 million out of the budget.
But the problem is in terms of resources, it's a matter of managing resources.
I mean,
from 2000 to 2010, the city's operating budget grew 20%, and that's real inflation-adjusted numbers, while it lost 5% of its population. You know, it's just like the Baltimore City school systems, and we looked at this study several years ago. You know, as the school system declined in student population over a decade, its administrative hiring went up over 93%. And
but
its per pupil
slashed.
Spending
but
went
that,
up.
But that's been
– So it's the same with city government.
In all fairness, Andre Alonso has slashed
– No, this is going
right,
way
he
before
is now
Dr. Alonso.
The bone and slashing even more on North Avenue. Right. So, I mean, that's not –
because he understands. He understands in order to get better, you have to cut. In the same way with city government.
So the money's in the classroom. But it still doesn't answer the question, what do you cut? And Andrew, let me ask you this question. So what's the example in other places? I mean, what happens when taxes are cut like this? I mean, maybe it is. Is it a growth spurt or is it devastating to a city in terms of how it functions?
I think there's a lot of evidence out there. And people have looked at how important are taxes for businesses and individuals. And it's true that lower taxes will generate growth, but it's true only if you hold everything else constant. And as you've pointed out correctly, unless we can think of ways, and Baltimore has been thinking of ways of doing what it's doing now and improving services with less money, that's a big if. If it can't do that, cutting taxes mean cutting services. And
that's absolutely false.
Well, wait, let me finish what you're saying. You can jump into that as you're false. But it's finish what you're saying, and I'll end, Andrew, then you can jump right in, Chris.
Yeah, so one example, and I gather the study that was pointed to that said we could cut taxes by half and pointed to Boston in the 1980s. And it's true. Boston had a Proposition 2.5, Massachusetts did, which cut taxes dramatically. But what people forget is that the state at that point stepped in with a lot of new, what's called additional assistance, state aid, to make up for the property tax cut. And it put in place a state aid formula that quite explicitly helped low-wealth cities and communities and cities with high needs. And that, you know, sort of Baltimore would fit into that category.
What's also important to note is that
not likely to happen in 2012 in Maryland.
What's also important to note is that Baltimore City has a lot of dead weight when it comes to property. The way they determine what a vacant property is, it's, you know, that can be scrutinized, and that's very skeptical. But we won't go there. 16,000 properties so far vacant in the city of Baltimore.
At least
that's what they say. At least
16 to 30.
25% of it is owned by the city. That means the city is getting nothing. They're only spending money on dead weight issues. When it comes to taxation and it's come to property taxes, there's two things that's very valuable for a city to have growth. One is the sale of homes, and two is the transfer of sale of homes. Fact of the matter is that it's very hard to sell a home in Baltimore City, not to mention that you have the problem with the crime and education, which is another issue. But you also have the fact is that someone has to purchase that home. Not only do they have to purchase that home, but they also have to look at the taxes that's coupled with it. And if someone can't afford, they can afford the home, but they can't afford the taxes, they won't move there and they will move elsewhere. And so it's a very important issue, and it does give a jolt to the economic growth of a town if you have the successful transfer of sales of homes and you have people coming into the homes, and if the city can manage a way to get rid of its dead weight and make it a profit.
No. We're also assuming, this pathway again, if I just insert, that the status quo in the city remains the same, and that is the distribution of opportunities for the residents that live here. We talk a lot about, I agree, there are a lot of vacant houses. I think we should have a different tax rate for property tax rate for vacants than we do those that are occupied. We also have so many people who are not working, who want to work, who could work. And if we ignore that part of our city, if we ignore that there simply are not opportunities that could be in place for many people's lives in our city, particularly young people and many of our adults, just the revenue that would be generated by them working and the redirected money out of the custodial programs, prison, juvenile justice, would in a year make up the $350 million the city loses. So I think we need to look fundamentally at what opportunities people are getting, and has everyone got the same chance to produce and be a contributing member of our society? And I think they can. I just think historically in our legacy, you know, from slavery to redlining to discrimination against African Americans, we lock up way too many people and accept that when they deserve to be and can be contributing members of our city.
But that has nothing to do with the cost of tea in China. Someone committing a crime and getting locked up for it in the property tax of a city, you can't make a direct correlation to that. That's the reason why we're in the problem we're at.
On the phone, but I think it, China aside, it has everything to do with that. And I will just leave that and, Mark, not capitalize, but clearly, if people aren't working, they're not buying houses, they're not contributing to the tax base. So I think, yes, the way our city invests in people, the way our city puts money out there and creates jobs and holds jobs for people that live in the city has everything to do with that.
Well, I do want to get to the phone, but Chris, let me let you jump in because you've been trying to.
It's going back to my point on the taxes on business called a personal property tax in Baltimore City. It's taxed at 5.67%. Now, versus the 2.268% for real property. So right there, that combination is sort of repellent to any sort of investment that is needed in the city to create, you know, the economic boon that it's that's going to help grow the city. And this is what's more important for its quality of life and reason why residents continue to flee out to a tax-friendlier county or suburb, because they realize that the cost of living here is not worth it.
I'm going to agree with Christopher on something. So mark this down in your calendars. We ought to get rid of the personal property tax statewide, because it's a terribly destructive and inefficient and a tax that's widely abused and very cumbersome to business. But we ought not to make up that money by cutting schools and recreation centers, and we ought not to make up that money by adding taxes to middle class and working families. We ought to make improvements to our other business taxes to make up that money.
The gentleman we have a lot of people calling in here, so let me get some callers on the phone and we can respond to our listeners. 410-319-8888. Aaron, on the east side, you're on the air.
Well, you know, when I look at this property tax, and, you know, all these proposals to cut the property tax sound real nice, except for one little thing. Where will the money come to replace the money lost by those cuts? And not only that, you know, when I ever hear folk talk about property tax, I always wonder, do they really mean eliminating and helping the poorest of the poor in this city? Because that's usually what folk mean when they say that. And to talk about dead weight when you got folk in this city who worked hard, who may not have the wealth of a whole lot of other folk in surrounding counties. And another thing that makes me angry is that I pay a higher water bill than the folk in the surrounding counties. And I find that to be objectionable, and that's another reason why I probably will not vote for the incumbent mayor or an incumbent council person.
Aaron, that's exactly what we're talking about. And when I mean by dead weight, I'm talking about things that are the city that is investing in that gives no money back. And that is vacant properties. And when we talk about cutting the property tax, it's not mean that we're eliminating services. What you're doing is essentially is that you're opening up avenues for people to come back into the city, for people to invest in the city, for people to do business here. It's being replaced by negatives. That's all simple. It's simply mathematics. I mean, if you take away certain tax provisions that are in the city that is being burdened on the residents and business, and you take that away, what you do is you open up for other people to now come in and invest in the city.
But it seems to me that that's a huge supposition for people to make, that that's going to happen, just because ipso facto you cut taxes, all of a sudden these droves, flows of people going to be coming into Baltimore City is really, I mean, do you have the crystal ball in front of you right here?
No, I have historical facts, and this is where, you know, the naysayers of those who are protecting the status quo in the city, not only in the city, but in the entire state of Maryland, is a mile-long line who make it a career out of protecting the status quo. And what we're not advocating, Mark, is that, sure, if you cut taxes on Monday by Friday afternoon, you know, you're going to see this great boon in economic growth. But cities like San Francisco, Oakland, and Boston, after they did dramatic cuts in their property taxes because they realized that the status quo was no longer an option and that fiscal crisis will continue. But in fact, those cities that have reversed population declines and broadened those tax bases are those that have reversed trends toward even higher property taxes. And even within 4 years, their tax receipts, inflation adjusted, from all sources exceeded what their the Prop 13 levels were.
But let me just throw this in, Chris, and just we can all talk about this for a minute, then go back to the phones. Donald, you're next, and then Michael. We talk about San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Right.
Well, first of all, that happened also during the Silicon Valley boom, when there was lots of money, lots of people with tons of money in this new industry, buying up homes. The retail value of homes in San Francisco is $750,000. It's not Baltimore City. I mean, it's apples and oranges.
No, it's not apples and oranges.
Where's
what they, they then had an incentive to come here and invest. Right now, there's not a welcoming mat coming to the city, or even now, even the state of Maryland, saying, please come here and invest. Bring your business here. Start a business here. Bring your employees here. Look at the states that have very low taxation, almost no personal, even states that do not even have a state income tax. These are the ones that are growing the fastest and the ones that are not in a fiscal crisis.
That's actually not true.
Andrew.
The evidence, if you look across the country, is that the rate of growth over time and the level of personal income tends to be higher in states which have higher taxes. And it's, I think, unfortunate that in over the last decade or so that a lot of people have argued that taxes drive everything. And certainly taxes are important. And if taxes in one place get out of line relative to other places, that can make a difference. But taxes are one of very many other things that influence decisions by businesses and individuals. And just having low taxes, but if you have terrible services, is not going to attract investment, but businesses or residents.
But that's
we have to take a break. And we'll come back to Donald's phone call, Michael's phone call, our five guests, property taxes, are they too high? Do you want them cut? What would happen if they were cut? Your thoughts on that, 410-319-8888. On the way to break, I have a very important reminder for everybody out of here. We're fast approaching the end of WEAA's fiscal year, June the 30th, and WEAA is in need of raising an additional $20,000 before June the 30th. We're a little bit short on our goal during the fund drive, and we need you, the UN Public Radio, to show your support right now. Make your tax-deductible contributions to WEAA securely online at weaa.org to help sustain what is your public radio station. We thank you for your support and making a difference for public radio. Your public radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Go to weaa.org, make that contribution, and we thank you very much. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We are joined by Neil Bergsman, director of the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute, Chris Summers, who is founder and president of the Maryland Public Policy Institute, Trey Lewis is president of the Baltimore City Young Republicans, Hathaway Farabee is executive director of the Safe and Sound Campaign, and Andrew Orshofsky is professor of public affairs and applied economics at the School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And you are the citizens at 410-319-8888. Not that these folks are not, but 410-319-8888. And as I promised, Donald in Northeast, you're on the air. You're on the air, Donald. Welcome.
Okay, thank you this evening, and welcome to your guests. Now, I'm trying to figure out, maybe Mark and your guests can explain to me, yesterday's Sun Paper article, spending $400,000, $1.9 million to rehab four houses. Doesn't make no sense. It's irrational. We can't understand that. The problem comes is that money are being invested in projects that provide no return for the citizens of this city who pay the taxes to finance these things, particularly when you get down to the Inner Harbor. Going back 20 years to or during the time of Schaefer, with the incentives and the perks and the giveaways, basically, that they did as far as building the harbor and some of these other projects. The same thing, Mark, with the expansion of the convention center and a building of a new arena. Why are people spending money on stuff that the citizens of Baltimore does it benefit from? And I think we have to call into question the abolishment of the Baltimore Development Corporation. It seems to be it is a entity, quasi-entity, which the court ruled that it is a city agency. Seemed like they were working for the developers and not for the citizens of the city. And I think the housing commissioner, I think we have cross-pollination. One person shouldn't be holding those two positions. I find a conflict of interest, and it's not in the interest of people who live in the city. I can't phantom in my mind spending stimulus money, taxpayers' money, when you can spend $1.9 million and tear down all of that lead paint-laden property. And they, but they won't pay the lead paint settlement, but they'll spend $500,000 a house. Please, something wrong with these people in Baltimore City. They must be lead paint babies.
Thank you, Donald.
Donald's absolutely correct, though.
About what?
He's correct about the wasteful spending that this town oversees year after year.
Well, I mean, there is an argument to be made in Baltimore City, and not just Baltimore City, but all around, but in Baltimore City that we're talking about right now, that the way we allocate our housing development dollars is backwards, often. It goes to big developers. It doesn't go to individual homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
People can't, like, go in and buy a city house. Suppose the city gave away those houses to somebody who actually said, yes, I can get a bank loan for $150,000, $300,000 in sweat equity, and I can rebuild this house. Just give me the house.
That would be perfect.
Well, they did that in the Dollar House way back when.
Right.
And then the city guaranteed the loans, and they're not allowed to do that anymore.
Can't do that anymore.
But a bank could give a loan, and I think you're absolutely right, Mark.
Chris?
Well, I do agree with the caller entry, I mean, of abolishing the Baltimore Development Corporation. I mean, the city officials know that deep cuts are economically necessary to attract investment back to the city. I mean, in residence, as it's revealed by the fact that they award these great big packages to big developers, and I'm talking about the TIFs and pilots that are handed out. So in order to make their investments economically viable. Now, if that's what makes tax cuts politically unattractive, because you're taking away that power from these city officials.
It's
an invitation also for corruption.
And I don't disagree with that.
Mayor Dixon or
whoever.
Councilman Holton. Right.
And I don't disagree with that. The question is, and I have the five of you here, let's take what you just said. Michael, we're going to come right to your call, 410-319-8888. Really want to hear what the citizens think about property taxes and how that affects your vote and what you think about the political and economic development of this community. But I understand what you're saying, and many people have argued about Baltimore Development Corporation and how money is allocated to large developers and hotels being built and where the money goes and races that we bring in and whether or not that's going to do anything to help the economic
development
of the city.
Right.
But the question is, given all that, I mean, I might even agree that property taxes should be cut. But I still have not heard from those of you, including our mayoral candidates, who keep crying about cutting the property taxes, what you're going to cut. What are you going to place
with? Mr. Somers just talked about it. I mean, he's
what?
Alluding to the fact that we pay for all these quasi-government agencies that produce nothing. We're talking about all these analysis groups, and we're talking about all of these funding projects and things of that sort that have no real meaning to them, and we have no real analysis. We have really no direction of where the money is going. It's just wasteful spending.
Well, my feeling is that if your goal was to bring middle class and working families back to the city, about the best economic development project you could do would be to renovate and rebuild our schools, because there's nothing like a bright, shiny, modern school that's going to make a neighborhood feel good about itself, that's going to make new entries feel good about coming and wanting to live and be a part of that neighborhood.
And if you use the construction funds to hire people that live in this city, this is back to the comment about so many folks who are not able to get jobs, then they start to have revenue. They have the ability to eventually buy a house. And we're starting to invest in ourselves rather than an outside contractor who, if we force them, will hire 10% of the population. And often folks say, well, Baltimore doesn't have the people that can do these trades. And that's if that is true, then shame on us. And I would argue that there are many people, there's an opportunity compact that's got young people learning the craft trades who just rehabbed a room at the Family League just as expertly as anyone else. All Baltimore people, all young kids, all who would have been locked up and instead now are working, who will draw $86,000 per kid back into the city instead of using that to lock the kid up, as well as having young people now working. And I think that's the trick. We got to figure out whether the people of Baltimore are worth investing in, or if the people in Baltimore need to be controlled and our elected officials just manage our demise. And I think that there's too much of managing and police control and acting as if this city is just horrendous, when in fact we have a lot of talent, a lot of skill. We spend a lot of tax dollars. I agree with the caller that says we have these groups that figure out what we should build next. What we should build next, I agree with Neil, are renovating our schools. We could put solar panels on top, on the roofs of every single school building. It would cut their electricity bills. There's a cut that we can make, Mark. It would produce more jobs. And it's that kind of belief in the citizens that I don't think our elected officials are exhibiting right now.
Now, very quick, Chris, I want to ask Andrew a question. I want to get to these other callers calling in, but go ahead.
Sure. I think it's – I mean, these are all good, valid points. But, you know, building all these new shiny schools is sort of like putting the new paint job on the car that's been sitting in your driveway for a decade that doesn't run. You need to create a tax policy in this city that is going to attract employers, that's going to make people want to live and work here. And the problem is now that you do not – and going back to my point about the personal property tax and it's so high, there's not an incentive to create a business or employ people here in the city, and that's why the residents are fleeing. So if you want to grow that quality of life, that's one of the first things, obviously, and also in tandem with cutting the property taxes.
Now, Andrew, I'm curious from your perspective, when you look around the country, are there cities from your perspective that are getting it right?
In terms of tax policy
and how that applies to others, especially cities that are like Baltimore, like Detroit, like Pittsburgh, like Cleveland, that are old industrial cities, that Milwaukee, that are struggling to survive in the face of the demise of the industrial economy.
Well, one thing I think that's critical, and I know quite a bit about Milwaukee, for instance. You need to have a government that's thinking very carefully about how to deliver services as effectively and efficiently as possible. And I don't know enough about Baltimore to say how effective the government is, but getting efficiencies, lowering costs is critical. First step, you have to have your own house in order. Second step is that you need to have cooperation from the state. I mean, almost every of those big cities that you mentioned are in bad fiscal position relative to their suburbs, which have higher wealth. And once you have your house in order and you're running efficiently, the only way, I think, is that to have the state as a partner providing more state aid. And that happens, municipal aid happens in some cities around the country, but frequently it doesn't.
Let me go back to the phones and Trey. You can jump right in, okay? 410-319-8888. Michael, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Yeah, the efficiency argument is a good one, but it's necessary but not sufficient. I mean, part of the problem is what we know is that we need to focus on evidence and we need to focus on, the best practices. But specifically, the wealth and health gaps, they're systemic. And part of the problem is that we're measuring our efficiencies off an old paradigm. And so without shifting the paradigm, all we get is these kind of rehashed arguments about this trickle-down silliness, which doesn't work, right? So I'm not saying I want to pay more taxes. I love my taxes to be lowered.
Amen.
But the real issue is that the two largest employers in the state of Maryland, the largest landowner in the city, for instance, don't pay any taxes. And so thousands of people coming in, trampling up the road, they don't pay anything. And anytime you mention it, the first thing they do is to threaten to fire folks, and who are they going to fire? And so the issue of equity is the appropriate lens and approach to this stuff.
So what does that mean, though? What approach to equity, how does that translate into what we've talked about here?
what that means specifically is, and equity quite simply is, who benefits and who burdens when you make any decision, right? And so we often mistake these budget conversations with equality, meaning, oh, everyone gets a fair share, but that assumes that the systems are fair to begin with. So equity picks up where equality leaves off. It says, well, oh, everyone's getting a cut across the board. Well, yeah, but the system is set up so that the city is hurt more. And so you can't just say we're going to cut across the board, because you have to look at some of the historic impacts of the system. And as long as you sort of use your scalpel around the edges, you're not getting to the systemic inequalities and inequities that are preventable, that are creating the wealth gap and the health gap, frankly. And this is evidence-based, and other cities, some of whom you've mentioned, are doing that. And so it's not that within the existing paradigm the folks are getting it wrong. We need a new paradigm, and that goes all the way to the national level. I mean, when you look at the evidence, innovation is caused by government, period. But that's a bad word, because it's a political hot button. We have to look at the evidence base and base our decisions on evidence, and then infuse efficiency on top of that. Then you'll get different outcomes.
Citizens and towns don't go in that depth in analysis and look at tax rates, things of that sort, as far as the growth of it and not the economic growth. It's really simple. Someone moves into a particular area because of convenience, because of what's conducive to it. The reason why people go to Towson and Catonsville over Baltimore City is because Towson and Catonsville, where they live, within 5 minutes, they have a decent school, they have a police station, they have a place where they can go grocery shopping, they have a place where they can get their oil change, they have commerce, they have trade, they have safety. That's the reason why they move there. And not to mention, when they go home, they have a decent neighborhood that they paid a reasonable amount of money for and a reasonable amount of taxes for. And that's the reason why they live there over Baltimore City. Baltimore City has a golden opportunity right now to look at a situation and look at its economic malaise and look at a situation now and say, what can we do to make this better? And it's and it's times like these where you can really put together good ideas and good thoughts forward to really make this a progressive town. Washington, D.C., which is 45 minutes down the street, was in the same predicament in the late 90s. And they said, what can we do to make this town grow? What can we do to attract people to come here? They worked on the crime issue. They worked on the housing issue. They made it so that people, when they moved into Washington, D.C., it was conducive for them to stay in Washington, D.C., not just live there, but stay in Washington, D.C. And the population grew over the 10 years by 75,000 people.
Right. And I'm going to all jump in here on this. And then please, you can start, Neil and Andrew, and I just want you, and Hathaway, and Chris, of course, is that Washington, D.C. supplanted poor working people without working to help poor working people with people of means who are mostly white, which is why D.C. is almost 50-50 now, white and black. Not saying interracial cities, I think, are the best thing going. But what I'm saying is that it didn't add population to push people out. So a lot of poor folks left, ended up in Prince George's County, and were pushed to the edges.
Mm-hmm.
So the question still is, you know, you can't – we cannot – there's no city in America that can replant itself with people of means while ignoring the poverty around them.
Which the only way to eliminate poverty is to make sure people have jobs. And the way people can have jobs in Baltimore City is to be hired to do all the work required to build, and many others – like, grow food, prepare meals for our schools. We absolutely can redo our tax structure in the city if, just as you say, Mark, we decide that we will absolutely not tolerate some folks being left out and being discriminated against, and my point, not necessarily yours, being locked up, and where the state spends over $750 million to keep people in custody. It's just not necessary. The city could be very, very different if we had folks who had the courage to invest in opportunity instead of crime control.
So, going back to the crux of what we talked about here, and the property taxes being, Chris, what a lot of the candidates are pushing in this election, and we still have not come to what does that have to do, or what does it have to do, with an overall plan for rebuilding our city, for making it vibrant again.
Well, I'll tell you, I looked at a lot of the websites from people running for mayor, and there are, as you said, most of them mentioned something about reducing property taxes either gradually or abruptly, and they all talk about revitalizing the city. But I don't see anyone making a plausible plan for where you could cut hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, I'm sure there are significant efficiencies that the city government can make, similar to what the school system has made. But it's going to be maybe if we do really great, it'll be double-digit millions. It will not be three-digit millions.
I mean, do we have to – I mean, that's why I wonder where this balance is. I mean, Chris, I mean, again, I hate to keep pushing this issue, but I've not heard anyone who wants to cut these property taxes to say what it would mean and what we're going to cut, because we can barely keep – what's needed for our kids and our communities open now. You can't drive down North Avenue without stopping then after at a body shop to get your axle fixed.
And we can't keep them open now. We're closing fire stations. We're closing.
Right. So what do we do?
We've closed libraries.
We stop locking people up.
Okay.
Let me suggest that.
Fire people and they start paying taxes. And we start to cut the property tax, as some of the mayoral candidates have suggested. We tax the vacant properties higher. I believe that Jody Landers has that in his position paper, and maybe Otis Rowley, I can't remember. We don't rely on slots, but we start to do a fundamental shift in how we regard the people that live in the city. Instead of looking at half the people as poor and dispensable, we turn that around, and taxes will come up.
Andrew, you're about to say something. I'm going to turn to Chris.
I just wanted to say that property taxes are important, but it's interesting, they're not the most important thing. And the latest data for 2008 from the Census Bureau, property taxes per person in Baltimore are $988. In Boston, they're $2,461, and in San Francisco, $1,986. So taxes are high. They're high relative to the suburbs. That's an issue around the country. But Baltimore does have a mix of other tax revenues, and I wouldn't, looking from a national perspective, say that Baltimore is out of line. Its property taxes are, in fact, modest relative to many other cities in similar situations.
Chris?
Baltimore doesn't border up against Boston. The promise, I mean, the politicians, I mean, they know the reason why cuts are resisted politically is they fear that they finally might have to implement some sort of fiscal discipline. And sure, there is going to be some short-term pain, and it is much needed because of there has not been budget restraint.
Sure.
It's going back to, you know, the city's operating budget grew 20% while its population fell 5% during that time. Now, there should have been red flags in slowing down the spending, but that's, you know, that's something you never really hear in a sentence in not only Baltimore City but in the state of Maryland. So if you want to increase that tax base and you want to have – the goal should be – is our goal and at the Maryland Public Policy Institute is I want to expand everyone's personal and economic well-being and should be adding more rungs on the economic ladder. But it seems that the status quo in the city, it's always been how many more rungs can we take off, or can we just only have – an X number of rungs on that ladder and not allow individuals to move up and increase their economic well-being.
The unfortunate thing is, Mark, the reason why we can't realistically answer that question, what are we going to do with the loss of $250 million, is because, unfortunately, like Chris has said, is that government can't and won't have a discipline as far as fiscal responsibilities, because they always have a revenue. They always have taxes. Unlike a business that has to 100% solely have results based upon its customers,
that's
its consumers.
But that's baloney.
But it's baloney.
I mean, the largest corporations in this country get all kinds of tax write-offs, get all kinds of incentives from the government.
But still,
they don't just
It's the operation of their business and the effectiveness of their business is what keeps them afloat. The fact of the matter is that city government, state government, federal government always has a bottom line coming in. It always has a revenue source coming in. And that,
I understand philosophically where you're coming from, but the question is, well, let me go to the phones here, to be fair. The listeners jump in, because a bunch of people are calling back in. Let's get them in before the end of the hour. Stephanie, you're on the air.
How you doing, Mark?
Hi, Stephanie. Welcome.
Also to your guest, greetings. One of the things that I noticed, I live in this city and have lived in this city for almost 60 years, And one of the problems is you're not going to revitalize anything. You're not going to bring business in here. You're not going to do anything until you deal with the crime issue in this city. The crime issue is what is forcing people out. And because the people are being forced out, those of us who are still in the city, our property taxes are off the hook as to what we're paying, you know, because I have a row house, and last year I paid almost $1,500 in property tax. I know people that have a house that they can walk all the way around in the counties, and they don't pay that. And that's ridiculous. But because of the loss of the people, the revenue is lost, and therefore we are the butt of paying or picking up the tab. And until they deal with the crime issue in the city, you are not going to get people to come back into the city. As a matter of fact, they're going to lose more people.
Stephanie, thanks for your call. And let's get another call here. And I'll let you all have closing thoughts. Timothy, you're on the air.
Wow. Mark, great program as usual, man. Just great program. Thanks. Listen, I'm born and raised in Baltimore myself. Been here 50 years. I have a house you can walk around, a rancher. My taxes are extremely high. Here's what we need, and this is not rocket science. We need a common sense approach to how we, not saying we got to go back to the low tax days of the 50s and 60s. That's never going to be. But here's my suggestion. We used to have dollar houses where you bought a house for it, you paid it for a dollar, fixed it up. I think what happened is we lost the value of treating us as citizens here in Baltimore City. My water bill is too expensive, and I think we can recap this and go back to what makes sense. We got too savvy. We started following what other states did or what other countries do. Like, for example, we always say, well, our kids got to compete globally academically. But when I look around, Mark, they send their kids to America to be educated. So we need to go back to the common sense approaches of things. And I got a lot more to say, but I don't have a lot more time. We need a round table. We need a meeting so we all can come in, Mark.
I agree. Timothy, I agree. I think this just does deserve a town meeting with all kinds of minds, several town meetings, mm-hmm. where people sit down and really wrestle with this thing in a very honest way. And I think people have to be realistic about, I mean, I private taxes, I mean, for regular working class Americans are too bloody high in this town. There's no question about that. Yeah. Because the question is how you resolve it and what do you do to make it work?
Well, it's like again, it's got to be worth their while. I mean, the reason why the property taxes in San Francisco is because people, well, one, they can't afford it to a degree. And not to mention that there are certain services, there are certain amenities that San Francisco has that no other city has, whether it be scenic beauty, whether it be the culture there, whatever. When we go 3,000 miles eastward to our hometown of Baltimore City, we have to make someone in Baltimore City want to live in Baltimore City. And it's reasonable for them to live in Baltimore City with their paying in taxes, the services they get, and the amenities that are around them. If you make those three things work, people will come back to the city and this city will flourish. It's a real simple formula.
Remember that when Baltimore City – I'm sorry, Chris, very quickly, but they gave you 30 seconds and you 30 seconds.
And a lot of this – I mean, this is the plan that our institute published. It's you can find it online at marylandjournal.org, and it's the Walters-Missarendino plan. And it's really very simple, and it's called for spending increases limited to the rate of inflation during a 4-year phase-in period. And this is implementing the fiscal discipline that is sorely needed. Sure, there's going to be a little pain over time, but once the city starts repopulating and the revenue starting to increase, and this is what like San Francisco, Oakland, and Boston, eventually they found out in a shorter period of time they exceeded the revenue projections, and you know, this sort of all of the naysayers were then shocked to see that, the gloom and doom didn't happen because people did come back to the cities.
Yeah. Well, steps 1 and 2 are still education and crime, and then step 3 is Christopher's plan.
And then step 4 is jobs, Neil. Let's just throw that in for the heck of it.
Well, you haven't gotten
much traction among the other panelists, but I do believe that when people work and all of them have a fair chance for it, the city will be a very different place. And when
we're going to need jobs to help with the crime.
And Andrew, in the last 30 seconds or so we have, what are your thoughts on what you've heard and where we are?
We have to be really careful to make big decisions in Baltimore reducing taxes based on what happened decades ago in two individual cities. You want to look at evidence from across the country, and that evidence suggests that big cuts in taxes without doing something about services are not going to bring in and attract new business and
Andrew Wachowski, University of Wisconsin, thank you so much. Hathaway Farabee, Safe and Sound, Trey Lewis, Baltimore City on Republicans, Chris Summers from the Maryland Public Policy Institute, Neil Bergsman from Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute. Been great to have you all on the air. We'll do this again. You all were just wonderful. Thank you for so much for doing this.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Folks, we're going to take a break and come back. On the way out, I have to remind you that this broadcast of the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Transit Administration. Maryland Transit Administration is a proud sponsor of the Black Male Identity Project. For more information, www.morethan28days.com. And that's 28 the number, morethan28days.com. We'll be right back as we take a look at Alternate Roots, which is coming to Baltimore. A huge festival coming to this town. And you know what? This festival probably didn't cost the city a lot of money, but it's going to be good. We'll be back.